It's just normal.
I'm trying to get to her.
Going home enough. But that's life.
It's good to be here. It's good to have you back.
Good to be back.
Hopefully, I won't give this to you. That's all right. Well, good morning. How are y'all? That good, huh? Is anybody awake? Better than me. Okay. We're continuing on. We're Miracles of Jesus. Last one I taught was the wedding at Cana, which was the first one that he had. And it was only in the book of John. This one's a little different. This one's in three of the Gospels. Guess which three? Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's not in John.
Is that supposed to be Jesus?
Nope.
No. What is it?
Jairus. Jairus.
Who's he?
We're going to find out, aren't we? I love somebody who gives me an opening like that one. Let's get in and talk about Jairus and the woman. They said of faith, but get into it. I chose a font this time that it didn't change, so that worked a little better. So, these two stories are intertwined with each other, so that's why kind of they're together. It's like you start into the one story, and then midway through you go into the other one, and then you go back to the first one that he's performing. So that's kind of the why they're done the way they are. So, and what I did was the treatment that Matthew gave of these two miracles is pretty light, but Mark and Luke is pretty significant, very complementary between the two books. So I've kind of concentrated on Luke and also Mark. So, and as Jesus returned, the people welcomed him, for they had all been waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus. There you go. And he was an official of the synagogue. And he fell at Jesus' feet and began to implore him to come to his house. For he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the crowds were pressing against him. What's Luke's background? What was he? A physician, okay. So he's going to go into pretty good details. How about Mark? Mark's background was as a Gentile, as a Roman. Okay. Who was there with Jesus during these miracles of these two? Luke. Mark wasn't there. So, Mark's a little bit, adds a little bit more to it. When Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and so he stayed on by the seashore. So you get a little more insight into how it's all starting when he comes back over there. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up, and seeing him, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live." And when he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. Same scene. You get a little more detail in one. He just got off a boat. This is the second Galilean tour, where he's going in and around Galilee and teaching and preaching and healing. Where'd they just come from? Anybody got an idea? Just a little bit of perspective. They just came across, and they're in Galilee. Okay? So it would be the Sea of Galilee they just came across. There was a couple of miracles that were associated with that. He had just come from an area where they had a demon-possessed man, and he'd cast out the demons. And on the way over across the Sea of Galilee, had a bad storm. And he quieted the sea. So that's kind of the two miracles that kind of just preceded him coming back over here. So, and this is in Galilee. This is where he grew up. Now he's ending this tour, so he's coming home. So he's gone to back to the, what would be considered the west side of the Sea of Galilee, because Nazareth is off the west side of the Sea of Galilee. Okay? What's it like when he gets back there? It's probably around Tiberias, because Tiberias is southwestern part of the Sea of Galilee. What's it like when he gets there? When he steps off that boat, what's it like?
A lot of people waiting for him.
A lot of people there waiting for him. They all wanted something. They wanted a miracle, didn't they? They're all waiting for him. There's a big crowd. Big crowd. Football stadium kind of crowd, maybe. A lot of people. So let's move on. And as Jesus returned, the people welcomed him, for they had been waiting for him. And there came in... let me ask that one. What was the level of prestige there that was associated with Jairus in these two passages? What kind of person was he? How was he looked upon? Pretty high prestige. Okay. He'd have been a part of the elite class of society in that local area if he was an official of the synagogue. What was he seeking?
Help for his daughter.
Help for his daughter. Okay, his daughter's dying. Okay. He wants someone to heal her physical ailment. Did he act as someone who was in the elite class? No, he didn't, did he? He was begging. Okay. What should he have been seeking? I mean, it's obvious he should have been seeking for his daughter, but what else should he have been seeking? Yeah. Seeking who he was. That's go ahead.
But the higher purpose is when he does this miracle, it's going to lead his whole family to God, because they're going to see the miracle.
It would be, but you don't know whether he did or not. You have no idea. And I think that's, you know, we're studying the miracles, and it's good to understand the miracles. But part of what I think is getting missed is what was the most important thing that Christ brought. And it wasn't the physical. It was the spiritual. Because after his, you know, it may have been, as Clayton said, his whole family decided to be disciples. But it may have been they said, wow, she's well. And they went on their way and didn't give it another thought.
We had to assume miracles for those that are watching, right?
The miracles were there to show power.
Right.
But, and they did show power. But that wasn't why he came.
Well, I know that, but it's evidence of why.
And we're going to talk more about why he did come. Moving on. And a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. So we get a short blurb kind of from Luke. Mark goes into a little more detail. A woman who had had a hemorrhage for 12 years and had endured much at the hands of many physicians and had spent all she had and was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak, for she thought, if I just touch his garments, I will get well. Immediately the flow of blood was dried up, and she felt her body that she was healed of her affliction. So he gives you a little bit more insight, a little more detail. But how much had this woman suffered? A whole bunch isn't a good answer either.
Well, yeah.
A lot. There you go. That's better. What'd you say, Lloyd?
A lot. She was honestly physically ill, but, you know, we've seen people in our own lives today who have come down with major illnesses, so taxing on the body, but also mm-hmm. financially.
Financially.
You know, time-wise, I mean, it kind of puts a halt on a normal way of life, which affects jobs, family, you name it. And that's a lot of suffering in itself.
That is true. She couldn't go to temple. Could she participate? Could she participate in Jewish society? No. She's losing blood all the time. How much energy does she have? How much ability does she have to fight off a cold? Not very much, okay? And she's been working with physicians for 12 years. What'd they do? Took all her money. Okay? And who knows what things they put her through to have her heal. So she's gone through 12 years of this. She's broke. She's been all kinds through probably some wacky things to go do from some physicians. Low energy. Okay. This woman, is she desperate? Okay, if you want to see somebody who's probably a model for depression, she's probably it. And the bleeding's worse than it's ever been. Didn't get better, got worse. So she's in what we call sad shape. So why'd she approach Jesus the way she did? She heard about him.
She believed that Jesus could even just being close to him and touching his clothes, she believed that he could heal her.
He believed it just touch his clothes.
But they had healed a lot of people in that community, and she may have known, hey, this is my last chance.
This is his second Galilean tour. They know he can heal. This is not quiet. Susan?
Well, I think because of her history, people didn't want to be around her because mm-hmm. she was unclean. And so her approach to a rabbi or a famous person would be, you know, she wouldn't want to face to face. She just touched the hem of his robe and said, this will heal me. You know, just the minimal amount of exposure mm-hmm. to get it done.
How easy is it to get lost in a crowd? Okay. She's gone there where there's a big crowd, right? And all these people, where's their focus? Jesus, okay. And she's touching all these people. What's happening? She's touching all these people from Jewish. Unclean. Because she's unclean. Okay, so she's taking a risk. What did I say? By getting in a crowd where nobody could, you know, they're all focused on Jesus. I'm at that. She figured she'd get lost. And she could quickly get in and get out. Nobody'd know about it. Best laid plans of mice and men, right? Mm-hmm. Then why'd she want to be inconspicuous?
She knew no one would want to be around her. She couldn't be around her.
She knew nobody wanted to be around her. She knew she was unclean. I go back to Leviticus. And this is where I wanted to pull from. Since we study so many times Leviticus, I figured I'd put it up here. Now, if a woman has a discharge of her blood many days, not at the period of her menstrual impurity, or if she has discharge beyond that period, all the days of her impure discharge she shall continue as though in her menstrual impurity she is unclean. Any bed which she lies, all the days of her discharge shall be to her like her at menstruation, and everything on which she sits shall be unclean, like her uncleanliness at that time. Likewise, whoever touches them shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes and bathe in water, and shall be unclean until evening.
You know, they're trying to stretch that, because if you look at it, all it says is wash your hands.
Well, until evening. But everybody's unclean. Everybody that she's touching. Does anybody want to be unclean? This lady is going to be treated like a pariah, right? Absolute pariah in society.
This is a spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really like you got out and washed your walking in the mud or working in the dirt.
That's right.
It's spiritual, I think.
It's, yeah, and it's a big deal in society to be ostracized for a time, and for her, for 12 years, really, from society because she's unclean. So this is tough. So what was she in Jewish society?
Unclean.
She was out, okay? Unclean. If somebody touches it, they're unclean. And what's the impact? Already talked a little bit about that. Basically, she can't participate in society. She may have to have somebody go do things for her. But it's going to be tough in society because nobody wants to be around her.
This is some of the stuff that makes Jesus so different. Because we see this with the food the same way. Mm-hmm. It's unclean. Anything it touches is unclean. Anything
that's right.
Using that knife and stuff. Same with the people. But Jesus, he's right up against unclean people because it's their only hope they have.
It's only hope they have. What could have been the impact of Jesus and her touching him?
If he was normal.
If he was normal, he'd be unclean, right? Some, what is that? He's unclean. How many times that happened to Jesus? If they only knew who that woman was that was touching him. A bunch. So I'm back. Immediately Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see the woman who had done this. So here you have one from Mark, and then from Luke. And Jesus said, "Who is the one who touched me?" And while they were all denying it, Peter said, "Master, the people are crowding and pressing in on you." But Jesus said, "Someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me." I love Cool Hand Luke. What we have here is a failure to communicate. He was saying one thing and they were saying another. He says, "Everybody was touching you." He says, "No, somebody touched me and power went out of me." So there was a breakdown in communication between him and the disciples. What indicated to Jesus that the woman had touched him and she was healed?
Power went out of him.
Power of the Holy Spirit went out and healed her. How amazing is it that he knew the woman touched him? You got crowds, everybody's like this, you know, they want a piece of him. Probably not a whole bunch, huh? As I said, it was the second one. He's pressed on all sides. But just somebody touched it. It shows just how one he and the Spirit are together. He knows immediately. Now, he didn't know who she was. He knew it was a woman. He knew she'd been healed. And he knew it just happened. But he wanted to know where she was. What was the disciples' response? Yeah, yeah. We say to duh would be one of the expressions. Everybody's touching you. I put it up there a little bit different. Mine was, "Are you kidding me? Everybody's touching you. What do you mean somebody touched you? Of course somebody touched you. They've been touching you ever since you walked off the boat." So they were not communicating very well. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." And Luke, when the woman saw that she had not escaped notice, she came trembling and fell down before him and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him and how she had been healed, immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." So her plan of being inconspicuous, a little touch, and then get out of there, blew up. Didn't work at all. Does she think pretty much she's going to get found out who it is? Yeah. He said, where's the woman? Somebody touched me. Where is she? There's somebody who is on a mission, okay? She's desperate. She's been through 12 years of horrible times, okay? And she did. She got through that crowd. And if she's weak and everything like that, it's almost amazing she got through that crowd. But this woman was on a mission. Now, I imagine when she said, it was me, and those people who knew her figured out who she was, I bet the crowd kind of moved out a little bit away from her. You think? She was in the spotlight. And she didn't want to be in that spotlight. And what was a woman's response when he said, who is it? Where is she? Because she heard it. She was scared. She was frightened. She'd been discovered. She had to admit she touched somebody. Probably touched a lot of people as she was battling through that crowd. So there was some risk to her. And it was a teacher. Now she'd seen all the things or heard the things that he'd done. I'm sure she hadn't seen a lot of things, but she'd heard. But she was frightened. She didn't know what was going to happen. What she maybe expect is Jesus' response. What would a Jewish leader have done in this society if she'd have done that to a Jewish leader normally?
Probably stoned her to death.
Stoned her, at least condemned her. Taken her and sent her off somewhere. So she is very frightened about what's going to happen next. His was compassion and encouragement. I imagine that surprised her and probably surprised some of the people who were around there. And he recognized her faith. That's what brought her to him. The Spirit healed her, but her faith is what brought her to be healed.
It's probably the difference between the other people that were touching. She touched him. She had faith that she was going to be healed.
Yep.
The rest of people were just touching, hoping.
Hoping for something. Okay, asking for something. And we're going to have a contrast a little bit here about the healing of a child or of someone as far as faith and how it goes. How does this relate to us?
In a spiritual way, that Jesus can cleanse our sins, which we can't do anything about, just like this woman.
That's right.
Desperate. And every man that's ever lived is in that situation until Jesus touches them through the Spirit and the Word and that heals them.
Yep. You see the same thing. Every person that's ever lived, that's living, that's going to live, because of Jesus and the power of the Spirit, is healed. Just like this woman. This is a physical healing. We're spiritually dead, aren't we?
Yes.
It's our faith that brings our souls that are black to Jesus. And Jesus and the Spirit is the one that raises us back to newness of life. And that's out of Ephesians. Saved through your faith. Not of anything you did. It's a gift of God. She got that gift.
She had to have the faith to do that.
Huh?
She had to have a lot of courage.
She had faith. And again, this is good. There's nothing that she probably had seen where you could just touch his garment and be healed. There was nothing magical about it, what he was wearing. But she believed it. While he was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official saying, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore? But Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." And he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. So here's Mark's account. Luke's is pretty much the same. While he was still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, "Your daughter has died. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." And Jesus heard this. He answered him, "Do not be afraid any longer, but only believe, and she will be made well." So there's a little bit added there. When she came to the house, he did not allow anyone to enter with them except Peter and James and John and the girl's father and mother. Obviously, the mother and father are going to be along with them. So pretty much the same. The official had just seen someone who had been healed. Now, I don't know if this woman was known, well-known in this area or not, whether the official knew or not, but he'd just gone through and seen something that was of healing. Jesus overheard the discussion from the people that came from the house. He said, "Your daughter's dead. It's too late." Right? What was Jesus' response? Why did he give that response? Why did he have to say that to the father?
The agony that he had to be going through to hear that his daughter had died. I mean, he believed that Jesus could heal, or he would not have ever sinned.
Could make her well.
And,
yeah.
But this is just a kind of a reinforcement of that faith when he saw the woman, and then when Jesus says, "Believe," encouraged him to go on forward.
He had just, if I interpret this correctly, the man was losing his faith. Oh, she's dead now. Okay, well, we're done. And Jesus said, no. You just saw me do something. Don't lose your faith. If you believe, it's going to be all right. He knew the man's heart. He knew where his mind was going. And he said, "You're going the wrong spot. I'm going to help you." Okay, what else happens? Some of the people there tells him his daughter's died. And what might have been his response when he heard the news? Or what was going to be his response until Jesus spoke up? "We're done." Huh?
"Oh, it's too late."
"It's too late. We're done. Can't heal her now. Just go home. All the people are crying, and just go lament over his dead daughter, and then figure out how, you know, the burial process, that all starts and everything like that. I've got a whole bunch of things I need to go do now." What was Jesus' response? He said he encouraged Jairus not to be afraid. His daughter would be healed. She's dead. Pretty big healing. They came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw a commotion, and the people loudly weeping and wailing. And entered in, he said to them, "Why make such a commotion and weep? The child has not died, but is asleep." Luke, it's even shorter. Why did he say she was asleep? Because she was dead. Why do you think he said that?
Maybe he's trying to encourage the people that she really was not dead, but he knew she was going to be alive in a short while.
Yeah, in his mind, she wasn't really dead. In everybody else's mind, she was dead. We don't know the reason why. Never explains it. It may have been to encourage him. It may have been to say, "You're not looking at it from my perspective. You're looking at it from a worldly perspective. From my perspective, she's not dead." Why would that be? What never dies?
Soul.
So from his perspective, she's not dead.
Yeah, we kind of see the same thing being spoken up with Samuel. When had Samuel conjured up by Samuel. awoken me or brought me out of my rest.
Out of my sleep, out of my rest, yeah.
From a biblical perspective, from a historical biblical perspective, it's always been referred to as some form of a rest.
Yeah, out of sleep, yeah.
You call it death and bed, but yeah, so maybe from a spiritual perspective, that's what Jesus was referring to.
From God's eye, from a God view, she was asleep.
1 Corinthians 15 is the same way, right? The souls that are asleep will rise from
the still souls that are asleep, yeah. A lot of times, the way, from a godly perspective, refers to asleep as opposed to dead. They began laughing at him and putting them all out. He took the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. And they began laughing at him, knowing she had died. So it's interesting they went from crying and wailing to laughing. I'm not sure, you know, it wasn't uncommon to have paid mourners. And I don't know, there was a few paid mourners that were in there and they just thought it was ridiculous what he had said and started laughing. I don't know. It just seems to be out of character. So what was their response? They laughed. They laughed at him. Not with him. At him. Probably thought he was an idiot. What is wrong with this guy? Can't you tell she's dead?
There's not too many examples of somebody being dead and being raised.
Well, he's a good segue with that one. What'd they lack?
Faith
in him. Should they have known that he could raise the dead? This is his second Galilean tour. That's a clue.
But he healed a lot of people, but he never mentioned raising somebody from the dead.
Okay. Here in Luke, soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the bier they were carrying him on, and the beater stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. "A great prophet has appeared among us," they said. "God has come to help his people." The news about Jesus spread through Judea and the surrounding territory. And Nain's about 20 miles away from where Jairus' daughter was healed. And this is in the first Galilean tour. This is not the first time they've seen him raise the dead. This is at least the second. And remember at the end of...
20 miles back then was a lot longer than 20 miles today.
Yeah, but this is the second tour. That was done on the first tour. And... yeah, 20 miles would take a while, but it'd get there.
They may not have seen the miracle done, but they certainly heard about it.
They probably heard about it.
Yeah, last week of miracles in Capernaum, the word spread.
The word spread.
For other cities, and they were bringing their sick. Yeah.
Well, you look at it, you can tell how the word spread. When he got off the boat, there was a huge crowd there. They knew he had some power. But it's kind of interesting what they say is, "A great prophet has appeared to us." They still didn't know who he was.
Right. But, they probably harkened that back to the story of either
Elijah.
Elijah
brought back the dead, too. Yeah.
And that was a prophet they firmly and fully believed in.
Yep.
It was beyond question.
Right.
And so, it's happened again.
It happened again. Another great prophet.
I thought this was after the first... healing. This was afterwards.
This is before. If you notice, it's in Luke.
It starts as the Galilean is the first ministry and teachings.
There's at least two tours in Galilee.
Yeah.
The one we're studying today is out of the second tour. This was out of the first tour. Because we're in Luke chapter 8 for the miracles that we're talking about, and this is in Luke chapter 7.
Her sister's at the synagogue official's house, so most of those people around were probably real strong Jewish faith.
Oh, you bet.
He was from God anyway.
Yeah, they may have heard the rumors and they said, don't believe this stuff, okay? So why did he heal this young man? Excuse me.
Compassion.
Okay? Compassion on the mother. Back into Mark, into Luke. Taking the child by the hand, he said to her, Talitha cum, which translated means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Immediately the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old, and immediately they were completely astounded. He, however, took her by the hand and saying, child, arise. And the spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given her to eat. And this is, as I said, Luke chapter 8, and the other one was out of Luke chapter 7. So, how similar is it to what Jesus said to the man and the daughter? You remember? Do I need to go back? Particularly in the Mark. Little girl, I say to you, get up. And he says, young man, I say to you, get up. Pretty much the same thing. Except it's the little girl versus the young man. How quickly was that daughter healed? Immediately. Wasn't she struggled out of bed and was barely able to move and everything like that? She was out of bed, she was walking, she was ready to eat.
Not as quick as Lazarus was raised.
Quickly as that, Lazarus was raised.
Luke 8 passage is interesting too, when it says her spirit returned. And she got up immediately. It was James that says the body without the spirit is dead. Clearly the spirit lives on.
Mm-hmm.
Some form of that. So.
Yep. Her spirit returned. And again, from Jesus' perspective, she was asleep. What was the response of those there? They were amazed, right? They were astonished. You see the contrast between the woman with the issue of blood, when she was healed, what do you think she said to herself? I knew he could heal me. Okay? I knew he could do it. When the little girl gets healed, they go, wow, I didn't think he could do that. Difference in faith. Huge difference in faith.
But you probably had to lay around the woman with blood the same way. Like you say, you had people reach out and touch them. All these people, they didn't have the faith that she did.
Right.
They were probably the same way. They were astounded. Her? Yeah.
Yeah. She said, I knew it. I knew he could do it. Never doubt in her mind. Okay. And he gave them strict orders that no one should know about this. And he said that something should be given to her to eat. Her parents were amazed, and he instructed them to tell no one what had happened. So, why does he do that? You don't know.
And there were all these people around that saw what happened.
And he said, don't tell anybody. Was that consistent?
Yes.
Yeah. When he did something like this, a lot of times he said, I don't tell anybody. Why?
Told the demons the same thing.
He told the demons. He said, don't tell everybody who I am. Why?
Not time for Jesus to be crucified, and something like this to the wrong people could create a situation, him be crucified before his time.
It could. That might have been a reason.
What they're seeing here is they're just seeing a prophet, they're seeing a healer. Not seeing the full picture of Christ, which only comes into play once he's on the cross.
Yep. I think they're seeing someone who can fix their physical problems. Why'd he come? Did he come to heal people like that?
Primary purpose.
Mm-mm. Let's go into Mark chapter 2. As he passed by, he saw the Levite, son of Alphaeus, sitting in a tax booth. And he said to him, follow me. So, and we know Alpheus is tax man. Followed him, Matthew. And he got up and followed him. And it happened that he was reclining at the table in his house, and many tax collectors and sinners were dining with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many of them, and they were following him. When the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with the sinners and tax collectors, they said to the disciples, why is he eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners? And Jesus, hearing this, said to them, it is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners. He stated his purpose for coming, right? How does he describe himself? What's the term he uses to refer to himself?
Physician.
Physician. Got a song, The Great Physician, right? One of the ones I like to leave. Doesn't a physician heal people? Yeah. So what sickness is that he came to heal?
Sin sick.
Huh?
Sin sick.
Sin?
Sin sick.
Sin sick.
Uncleanness.
Uncleanness. Us. Our sickness. Our spirit that's sick or dead is what he came for. Jump over into Mark chapter 10. But it is not this way among you. But whoever wishes... Oh, let me set the stage for this one. This is one where James and John's mom has just come to him to say, can my son sit on your right and your left hand when you have your kingdom? And the other 10 disciples heard about it and weren't happy at all. And this is talking about servants and where the servants are going to be in the hierarchy. But it is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you, you shall be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. So in 2, he said, I'm the physician to heal. And here he adds a little bit more to it. How's he going to heal our sickness? I can't hear you, Wanda. I can see you talking now. One ringy dingy. For those of you that remember Lily Tomlin.
Of course, Paul, he had to die.
He had to die, okay? That ransom. And that's in quotes because it's actually Christ speaking, but he's the ransom for many, a whole many. Us, many. He's going to die on the cross as a ransom for our souls. He's going to pay the price that we should pay. That's what a ransom is. So why didn't he want anybody to tell him what he had done?
Because he had healed physical sicknesses. And he was, his main purpose spiritual sickness.
That's where his focus was, to take care, to teach, to show the way, to become that ransom. And if he's spending all his time physically healing, that's going to get lost. People are going to be focused in on the temporal, in the immediate, as opposed to being looking at the eternal and the important. And he wanted them to look at the eternal and the important and listen to what he tried to show them about God. Because how had the Pharisees and the scribes done in teaching the people about God and who he was? Terrible, horrible job. Christ was trying to say, this is who God is. He loves you so much, he sent me to die on the cross. And that's what I'm going to go do. And I'm going to heal everybody as the great physician. Which is when he was talking to the Pharisees with the tax collectors and, quote, the sinners. He said, I came to heal. I came to heal spiritually. That's my focus. I came to be that ransom to heal. I think that's my last thing. Yep, that's it. Questions?
Yeah,
Weldon's teaching next week? I didn't look up to what it was. Did you? I didn't look it up to see what it was.
Very briefly.
Very briefly, okay. You don't remember? It's another miracle. Sure bet there. Well, thank you.